Remarks of the President upon arriving NATO headquarters, Southern Forces in Europe, from Naples, Italy, July 2, 1963.
Mr. President. Mr. President, Prime Minister Leone, Foreign Minister Piccioni, Defense Minister Andreotti, members of the NATO command, ladies and gentlemen. It's fitting that my travels away from home should end in this country and in this city. Italy, wrote Shelley, is the paradise of exiles. And in my exile away from Washington, I've enjoyed this paradise as the last stop in Europe. I shall leave this country with regret. It is also fitting that the final event of this European tour should take place at this NATO headquarters. NATO is one of the best and the earliest examples of cooperation between Western Europe and North America. The NATO Defense Treaty pledges us all to the common defense, to regard an attack upon one as an attack upon all, and to respond with all the force at our command. And that pledge is as strong and unshakable as it today as it was when it was made. Finally, it's fitting to take this opportunity to review our findings and feelings after 10 days in Western Europe. Specifically, I returned to Washington, newly confirmed in my convictions regarding 8 principal propositions. First, it is increasingly clear that our Western European allies are committed to the path of progressive democracy, to social justice, and to economic reform attained through the free processes of debate and consent. I cite here again to stress the fact that this is not a matter of domestic policies or politics, but a key to Western freedom and Western solidarity. Nations which agree in applying the principles at home of freedom and justice are better able to work with each other abroad. Second, it is increasingly clear that our Western European allies are determined to maintain and coordinate their military strength in cooperation with my own nation. In a series of briefings and reviews, I have been impressed less by NATO weaknesses, which are so often discussed, and more by the quality of the men, the officers, their steadily more modern weapons, their command structure, and their dedication to freedom and peace. While we can take heart from these accomplishments, we still have much to do. Important improvements and additions are still needed, and this is not the time to slacken our efforts. But if we continue to build up our strength at all levels, we can be increasingly certain that no attack will take place at any level against the territory of any NATO country. And third, it is increasingly clear that our Western European allies are committed to peace. The purpose of our military strength is peace. The purpose of our partnership is peace. So our negotiations for an end to nuclear tests and our opposition to nuclear dispersal are fully consistent with our attention to defense. These are all complementary parts of a single strategy for peace. We do not believe that war is unavoidable or that negotiations are inherently undesirable. We do believe that an end to the arms race is in the interests of all and that we can move towards that end with injury to none. In negotiations to achieve peace, as well as preparations to prevent war, the West is united, and no ally will abandon the interests of another to achieve a spurious detente. But as we arm to parley, we will not reject any path or refuse any proposal without examining its possibilities for peace. And fourth, it is increasingly clear that our Western European allies are willing to look outward on the world, not merely inward on their own needs and demands. The economic institutions and support of Western European unity are founded on the principles of cooperation, not isolation, on expansion, not restriction, The common market was not designed by its founders or supported by the United States to build walls against other European and Western countries, or to build walls against the ferment of the developing nations. These nations need assistance in their struggle for political and economic independence. They need markets for their products and capital for their economies. Our allies in Europe, I'm confident, will increase their role in this important effort, not only in lands with which they were previously associated, but in Latin America and every area of need. And fifth, it's increasingly clear that nations united in freedom are better able to build their economies than those that are repressed by tyranny. In the last 10 years, the gross national product of the NATO countries has risen by some 75%. We can do better than we are doing, but we are doing much better than the party dictatorships of the East. There was a time when some would say that this system of admitted dictatorship, for all its political and social faults, nevertheless seemed to offer a successful economic system, a swift and certain path to modernization and prosperity. But it is now apparent that this system is incapable in today's world of achieving the organization of agriculture, of satisfying consumer demands, and the attainment of lasting prosperity. You need only compare West Berlin with East Berlin, West Germany with East Germany, Western Europe with Eastern Europe. Communism has sometimes succeeded as a scavenger, but never as a leader. It has never come to power in any country that was not disrupted by war or internal repression or both. Rejecting reform and diversity in freedom, the communists cannot reconcile their ambitions for domination with other men's ambition for freedom. It is clear that this system is outmoded and doomed to failure. And six, it is increasingly clear that the people of Western Europe are moved by a strong and irresistible desire for unity. Whatever path is chosen, whatever delays or obstacles are encountered, that movement will go forward, and the United States welcomes this movement and the greatest strength it ensures. We did not assist in the revival of Europe to maintain its dependence upon the United States, nor do we seek to bargain selectively with many and separate voices. We welcome a stronger partner. For today, no nation can build its destiny alone. The age of self-sufficient nationalism is over. The age of interdependence is here. The cause of Western European unity is based on logic and common sense. It is based on moral and political truth. It's based on sound military and economic principles, and it moves with the tide of history. And seventh, it is increasingly clear that the United States and Western Europe are tightly bound by shared goals and mutual respect. On both sides of the Atlantic, trade barriers are being reduced. Military cooperation is increasing, and the cause of Atlantic unity is being promoted. There will always be differences among friends, and they should be freely and frankly discussed. But these are differences of means, not ends. They are differences of approach, not spirit. Recognizing these and other problems, monetary payments, foreign assistance, agriculture, and the rest, I return to the United States more firmly convinced than ever that common ideals have given us a common destiny, and that the Atlantic partnership is a growing reality. Eighth and finally, it is increasingly clear and increasingly understood that the central moving force of our great adventure is enduring mutual trust. I came to Europe to reassert as clearly and persuasively as I could that the American commitment to the freedom of Europe is reliable, not merely because of goodwill, although that is strong, not merely because of a shared heritage, though that is deep and wide, and not at all because we seek to dominate, because we do not. I came to make it clear that this commitment rests upon the inescapable requirements of intelligent self-interest. It is a commitment whose wisdom is confirmed by its absence. When two world wars began,
and by its presence in 18 years of well-defended peace. The response which this message has evoked from European citizens and the press and leaders of the continent make it increasingly clear that our commitment and its durability are understood. And at the same time, all that I have seen and heard in these 10 crowded days confirms me in the conviction, which I am proud to proclaim to my own countrymen, that the free men and free governments of free Europe are also firm in their commitment to our common cause. We've been able to trust each other for 20 years, and we are right to go on. 115 years ago this month, Mazzini addressed a mass meeting in Milan with these words: "We are here to build up the unity of the human family, so the day may come when it shall represent a single sheepfold with a single shepherd, the Spirit of God. Beyond the Alps, beyond the sea, are other peoples now," Mazzini said, "striving by different routes to reach the same goal, improvement, association, and the foundations of an authority that shall put an end to world anarchy. United with them, they will unite with you. Today, Italy, the United States, and other free countries are committed to this great end of the development of the human family. In time, the unity of the West can lead to the unity of East and West, until the human family is truly a single sheepfold under God."